Chapter 29. Owen. The purple light of dawn outlines the surrounding peaks, illuminating the misty battlefield and the swarm of mobilizing troops below. Commanders call out in the retreating darkness, their harsh voices echoing throughout the valley as both sides ready themselves for battle. I stand beside Talon and Zara on the wall, watching the proceedings with my bow in hand. My stomach writhes in anticipation, and I have to keep myself from tapping my foot while my entire body feels like a bundle of frayed nerves. "Take a deep breath and calm yourself, Owen," I think, swallowing my fear like bitter medicine. "You've been in fights before. There's a bloody mountain between you and them." "But light, there's so many."
Nightingale captains converse quietly behind the ranks of archers, and silent runners carry full quivers of arrows, placing them at varying intervals across the wall. A glance to my side reveals that my friends appear just as restless as I am, their faces grim, their eyes trained on the army. Zara has her talisman at the ready, though she rubs it self-consciously between her fingers a bit more anxiously than her usual manner. Talon looks like he could use a pint of ale, but instead he keeps his hands on his bow, ready to knock an arrow at a moment's notice.
"At least I'm not the only one who's nervous." I take another breath and exhale slowly, turning my attention back down to the field. The minutes pass at a crawl, the cloudless sky gradually brightening until the entire vale is visible. The steam from the hot springs swirls about, but I'm still able to see the majority of the host arrayed before me. There are ranks of soldiers carrying broad kite shields in the front, with men bearing spears and ladders behind them. Blocks of archers are spaced out to support the infantry, and in the back, engineers continue to work on siege engines, the half-built monstrosities half-hidden by the fog. A lone figure rides out ahead of the army, his steel armor bright even though the sun hasn't fully risen. "General Moore," I think, recognizing him even from far away. The man raises his lion's head mace into the air, and the soldiers behind him begin banging their weapons against their shields, filling the valley with a terrible noise like beating drums. I reach to the side and take Zara's free hand, squeezing her fingers tightly as she squeezes mine.
"This is it, soldiers," one of the Nightingale captains declares behind us. "Remember, we fight for our home, for our wives and for our children. For Dunmar City! For Dunmar City!" the rebels shout in unison.
Below, General Moore rides his horse along the front ranks of his troops, delivering some speech that none of us can hear, his mace still held aloft. His men continue to bang their weapons against their shields, creating a droning cacophony that fills me with a profound sense of dread. Eventually, he turns his horse back to face us, his gaze sweeping over our defenses one last time. Then, he brings his mace down, signifying the charge. With a roar, the front ranks advance, their feet beating a powerful rhythm into the ground. The ladders follow soon after, as do the archers. It isn't the entirety of the army, but it's still hundreds, if not thousands, of troops.
"Prepare a volley!" our captain shouts.
Releasing Zara's hand, I pull out an arrow and knock it to the string. Joining the other archers on the wall, I pull back and hold, resting the fletching against my cheek.
"Loose!"
The command comes a second later, followed by a noise of snapping bowstrings. A cloud of arrows rises into the sky and descends on the attackers, pelting them like a deadly hailstorm. Their heavy shields provide them with cover, but still there are casualties, a chorus of screams joining the raucous battle cries. As I draw another arrow, I can't help but feel disgust for the loss of life.
"There are demons out there, and we're busy here killing each other."
I shake my head, fitting the arrow to the string.
What a terrible waste.
And yet I know there was nothing I could have done to prevent this fight. When the king himself is bent on destroying those who oppose him, there is little that a ranger's apprentice can do to stop him. Æthelgar will drown these mountains in blood if he has his way.
And this is only the beginning.
The attackers look like they're about to make another push. Discarding my empty quiver, I call for a runner to bring me a new one, watching as another line of shield-bearing soldiers begins to form up. Down in the field between us, corpses litter the ground like fallen leaves, the grim results of a half-dozen failed charges. A young lad, probably no more than 12 years old, rushes over to my position on the wall, carrying a fresh quiver bristling with arrows. I take it with a grunt of thanks, then quickly knock an arrow, peeking through the crenellations to watch as the enemy troops advance. They come in rows, 3 men deep, holding their shields at the front and top of their ranks to protect them from our projectiles. They march at a deliberate pace, breaking away from the bulk of the main army and approaching the imposing gates of Dunmar. All along the base of the mountain are half-dug trenches, swathes of earth that have been turned over by spade-carrying men desperate to produce cover for the crossbowmen. They had adopted this tactic once they realized our walls were too high for their ladders.
"Loose!"
one of the captains commands. I let my arrow fly. Dozens of bows answer the call as well, the archers releasing their missiles on the encroaching shieldmen. Arrowheads thunk into wood and flesh below, dropping some of the soldiers, but otherwise doing little damage. As a group, we draw again, readying another volley. Other sections of the wall loose arrows too, producing a constant, deadly rain. We repeat the process again and again, peppering their advance with feathered shafts and picking them apart bit by bit. They manage to make it to the trenches, using the upturned earth as additional cover as other men begin to work with their spades. It's only a matter of time before crossbow bolts fly up from the field and crack against our fortifications, some finding unlucky victims. A man not 2 paces away takes a bolt to the chest and he screams as he falls backward, blood spreading across his tunic.
"Take cover!"
I cry, ducking behind the wall as more of the deadly bolts assail us. Nearby, the captain shouts for us to loose at will. Soldiers on both sides of the conflict are taken down at a faster rate from the dual barrage. Screaming and cursing fills the air, along with the scents of blood and viscera. In the chaos, I whisper the ranger's oath, its mantra granting me a small amount of peace and focus. A familiar figure races from another section of the wall and hunkers down beside me, his smirking visage incongruous with the violence unfolding around us.
"These sots don't know when to quit, do they?"
Talon remarks, breathing heavily.
"We've been pushing them back all day now, and they still return for more."
"It's only the first day," I reply, peering out and letting fly another arrow before crouching back down. "They still have a lot of troops and weeks before winter sets in." He shakes his head.
"Not at the rate they're throwing men at us."
He jabs a thumb in the direction of the army. "It's like they don't even care how many they lose." I reach down to my belt and pull out my water skin, popping the cork and pouring some of the liquid into my mouth. When I'm done, I hand it over to him. "Once they dig in, things will slow down, mark my words." He accepts the skin gratefully, taking a long drink and swishing the water between his teeth before swallowing. The archer next to us jerks backward with a choking sound, a bolt sticking right through his neck. He lands hard on his back, blood gushing out of the wound as he sputters and tries unsuccessfully to staunch it. It isn't long before he finally lies motionless, his legs going still after a final spasm. 2 young women, each wearing a blood-stained apron, rush forward in a half-crouch and grab his body, dragging him off the wall to one of the surgeon stations.
Little good that'll do him now.
More than an hour passes, both sides exchanging attacks until eventually the enemy begins to withdraw from their trenches. They only leave a few shield-bearers to hold the line. After that, things finally start to calm down. Glancing through the gap in the wall, I see the Red Army entrenched in the misty veil like a monster biding its time. Beyond the picket line, surrounded by a sea of red tents, is a section that looks like a lumber yard. Engineers, who look like little insects in the distance, scurry around a large construction of timber and metal, different projects combining into a wagon-like structure that grows larger by the hour.
"What do you suppose they're building out there?"
Talon asks, coming to stand beside me. I squint, trying to get a better look. "Probably a siege tower or a battering ram," I reply, noting the enormous wheels getting affixed to what appears to be axles. "What else could it be?"
"I don't know," Talon replies wearily, "but it's huge. Whatever it is, it can't be good."
Someone snorts off to our right, and both of us turn to see a grizzled old nightingale unstringing his longbow.
"What?"
Talon asks, frowning.
"Those damned kingsmen are fools if they think they're going to take Dunmar City,"
the man says, tucking the yew-bow under his arm.
"Our walls are too tall, and the doors are solid stone. No battering ram can bring them down, no matter how big."
Grunting, I look away from him and back out toward the machine.
I wish I had your confidence, old-timer.
He snorts again and wanders off, muttering something derisive about foolish king-loving dolts under his breath. Talon lets out a long sigh.
I need a drink, he says longingly.
You always need a drink, I reply. Here, have some more water instead. He takes the water skin grudgingly and has another sip. Seeing the bodies in the trenches, I can't help but agree with Talon's assessment, at least in part. These attacks have been costly for King Æthelgar's army. He obviously has men to spare, but part of me wonders at the general's overall strategy. For every nightingale they manage to kill with their crossbows, 10 of their troops die by our rocks or arrows. Those trenches must have something to do with it, I conclude, noticing how they stretch out to either side of the city's entrance, creating a corridor. That, and whatever they're building out on the field. Another wounded man on a stretcher goes by us, a crossbow bolt protruding from his belly and his eyes squeezed shut in pain. Something else is bothering me, I remark, watching the man being carted away to see the surgeons. Why does this General Moore seem so intent on assaulting the wall like this, when he could just set up a perimeter and starve us out?
It's like that curmudgeon Sturgis said, Talon replies, tossing the waterskin aside. Winter is on its way, and the passes will soon freeze over.
He could still maintain a perimeter, I insist stubbornly. The passes would seal us in here as well. He could barricade the mountains and leave a winter guard, then come back in the spring to continue the siege.
He's planning something, and I'd wager he aims to teach us all a lesson before the snows start to fall.
As I stare out at the battlefield, my eyes sweeping over the fallen, I am reminded of Zara's words to me the other night, and I begin to understand. Yes, Elias is imperfect, and the nightingales are just like anyone else, with good ones and bad ones in the mix. When I swore the oath, I promised to protect the realms of men, rebels and all. A sudden idea strikes me, something I hadn't considered before. On impulse, I leave the wall and head for the stairs, making my way to the street as the idea takes shape in my mind. Talon follows me and exclaims,
"Hey, where are you going?"
"To the house," I reply without stopping. "There's something I need to do." The city is still deserted, most of the citizens hiding in their homes with their families. We make it back to our dwelling with little trouble, and I go directly inside, making straight for Zara's study table, which is cluttered with an assortment of books and scrolls. "Where is Dunmar's aviary?" I ask, sitting down and pulling out a blank sheet of parchment, as well as a quill and a jar of ink. Talon frowns.
"The aviary? I think it's in the southern tower. Why?"
I begin furiously scratching words into the parchment, grimacing at my poor penmanship. My idea has become more solid now, and I write quickly before I can second-guess myself. "Because I need to send a letter. I only hope their archers aren't skilled enough to shoot down birds." He scoffs.
"I doubt it. They're not rangers."
Silence fills the room as I put the final touches on my letter. I include my rank and station as I sign it, then sprinkle a pinch of sand to help the ink dry, hoping it will be fast enough. Carefully folding the parchment, I begin melting a nub of wax to seal it. Talon opens his mouth to ask something, but cuts off as the sound of bells ringing comes from the gates.
"The walls,"
I say, swiftly sealing the letter and standing up.
"They're making another push,"
Talon replies, fingering the hilt of one of his short swords.
"We need to get back."
I nod and follow him out onto the street.
"First, let's get this to the aviary. Then we'll go to the walls."
"Fine," he answers, heading toward the front of the cavern.
"But let's hurry. I don't want to miss any of the action."
Clutching the letter tightly, we break into a light jog, our weapons bouncing noisily as we once again traverse the city streets. The bells, ringing out urgently, seem to entreat me on as we go, reminding me of what's at stake if we lose the battle here.
Light, I hope I'm not making a colossal mistake. What I'm about to do could be considered a violation of my oath and very well get me expelled from the Rangers. Or worse.